Welcome to your next step up the self-publishing mountain.
I'm Matilda Swift, author of Quintessentially British Cozy Mysteries.
And I'm Samantha Cummings, author of young adult books about magic, myths, and monsters.
I've written the books.
Changed their covers.
Tweaked their blurbs.
Tried tools from a dozen ad courses.
And I'm still not seeing success.
Now, we're working together to plot and plan our way from barely making ends meet to pulling in a living wage.
Join us on our journey where we'll be mastering the pen to snag that paycheck. Hello and welcome to Pen to Paycheck Authors Podcast. I'm Matilda Swift, here with my co-host Sam Cummings, and we're here to write our way to financial success. We're two indie authors with over a dozen books between us, and still a long way to go towards the quit the day job dream. If that sounds familiar, listen along for our Mastery Through Missteps journey. Each week we cover a topic to help along the way. This week's topic is going to be marketable quotes and scenes. But before that, let's do our wins and whinges of the week. Sam, what are yours?
My major win is that I published a book today. Yes! my seventh book. It's the third in one of my series. And yeah, that went live on Amazon today. And yeah, I'm happy that it's done. I know that that's not the end of the process, but in my mind, I'm like, just for like today and tomorrow, I'm pushing it away before I start like talking about it on socials. So I'm very happy that that's like out there. Very exciting. It always feels a little bit anticlimactic, I think, when you actually get to publishing day. Like,
yeah, like where's the parade? I don't know.
Yeah. No,
I have a friend who always gets a haircut when she finishes a book. And I think I have got a plan this time for a launch, like an event to do for a launch. I think I'm going to start from now on doing something like personally to celebrate, which I'm about to wetting my win actually. So yeah, I think I feel like we need to start doing something on more ourselves for our launches.
Yeah.
But you're busy this week anyway, because
it just felt a bit. Yeah, I mean, crazy week. For those who are just listening, I am in a different location. And it's part of my win as well for this week is that I had a really busy week last week. So I've taken myself away this weekend and the whole of this week. And I'm in Harrogate, which is North Yorkshire. And I'm just living my best life of editing and walking around and drinking coffee. So that's like a big win because it's like treating myself as the author I want to be treated as.
Yes. And it's near enough me that I think it's the same. So is it like quite nice and sunny?
Yes. Mm-hmm. Oh, today has been glorious. Just a perfect day. I've gotten all of my steps in and more. Fantastic. So yeah, it's been amazing.
Is there a whinge?
There is a slight whinge. I'll do two whinges. My editing is still taking time. So I'm currently editing another book. And as much as I love what I'm doing, I didn't realize how much I needed to rewrite at the start. And I love what I'm rewriting because I think I'm really setting the story up for success. I think it's going to be amazing. But the rewrite is taking longer than I thought it was going to take. But that's fine. It's okay. I'm taking time as needed. So it's a little bit of a whinge just on my own part because I should have written it better the first time around. But that's just one of those things.
Do you aim to write it well enough the first time around that you don't need much editing?
Yes. But on this one, I didn't, clearly. I was just like, oh, I'll just throw the words on the page and we'll see what happens. So I can see like parts where I've just taken shortcuts and thought like future Sam can deal with that. And now future Sam is dealing with it. And she's not happy. but then like my actual whinge is more like admin-y related. So I've set up a Facebook ad for one of my books, which is the other werewolf book, Curse of the Wild, and it's getting great clicks on Facebook, but it's not yet converted. So I'm just playing that fun game of how to turn clicks into conversions, which is what all of us play on a daily basis. So that's my whinge, is just like, oh, I forgot all about this part of doing ads.
So, the part where it doesn't like,
yeah, my whinge,
because it's already a lot of work set up, just like adding in all the money. Not successful.
Yeah. And I love the ad that I created, but yeah, we'll see what happens. How about you? What are your wins and whinges?
Well, I'm going to join a similar whinge. This is not necessarily... My whinge is a little bit different. So I have got a book bub this week. That's also excited about. It's on Wednesday. But because my KDP renewal period is supposed to book bub, I couldn't set up the full like run-in that I would have wanted to sort of build up readers. So the book bub is on a box set that I really never promote and never seem to sell. Mm-hmm. And so I thought I'd do some Facebook ads to try and like at least, you know, pull it out of the low, all very high numbers. I never know how I'm supposed to refer to them. the big numbers. So I on the ad copy, it specifically says like free to read and Kindle Limited. I'm trying to get some KU readers before it's discounted. It's full size box at the moment, or full price, sorry. And it's got an Amazon, I don't want to say attribution. Attribution link? You know the one you can track links. I've got so many tabs open right now from Amazon, and I was talking to a friend who's got like part of their account closed, and we're trying to figure out which part of your account is closed, which of the many things you have to be logged into has been closed. So it's got a link on it, but it's obviously days behind reporting. It's always so delayed.
Yeah.
And the only thing I can do to go off is like some page reads, but the rank is rising much faster than the page read suggests. It's like people are borrowing it. I just have no idea how many.
Right.
It's so frustrating to deal with ads when it's like, when that's the case. It's like, I have to feel confident looking at the rank rising that there are enough of borrowing that there'll be sales and that there'll be page reads in future to compensate for the price of the ad. Yes. And like each borrow, it's a large box set. So each borrow is worth about a day's worth of ad pay that I'm spending at the moment. So even if I got only one borrow a day, that would make it worthwhile, but I don't know if I'm getting one more a day, you know, from the ad. And it's just like a lot of having to think about that, a lot of like juggling, trying to improve the ad. And all you have to do is guess about like, is this the ad? So I'm doing dynamic creative. Is this the picture that's causing the conversion, or is this the picture that's causing the conversion? Which one is getting the right click through? So you can get your click through rate high and your costs low, and then not have the right conversion. It's just like there's a lot of metrics. And so much of it is guessing.
Yeah.
So I've been trying to do that. Anyway, so I've been trying to do that this week. So that's a long, rambling way to say, like, I'm back in the Facebook ads trenches.
Yes.
When, again, it's like, it's so much effort to set them up and to, like, do the process and the monitoring that you think, and it's also not successful. It's not, like, wildly making millions, you know, and I have to still have to think about more. So I did some... I took out the images that weren't working yesterday and put in some new ones that are kind of variations of the ones that were working. And because of today's topic as well, sort of related to what we're going to talk about in a bit, I also made a video today to see, because I know that's supposed to get really low cost per click payments. Mm-hmm. So I've put that in to see if that works. But, you know, as always, I put it in following Facebook requirements I found online about sizing. The sizing didn't work for the ad that I'd got, the ad placement I've got, so I had to remake the whole thing, which was very laborious because I don't have a paid Canva account, so I had to like actually physically remake every single scene in it. So that took a while, and it's just been one of those weekends where it's one of those lives where every small thing turns into five other big things.
I literally just said that to myself today just before we started this podcast, and I was moving things around, and I actually just said out loud, is everything so much more complicated than you want it to be?
Yeah. Because I think that's the problem with my like to-do list, is I always think I can make a to-do list that fits. If the to-do list were correct, it would fit. Whereas like actually everything ballooned into five more things.
Yeah.
And I don't make my to-do list to factor that in. And I'm trying to have a job and write books and market books. And like my win of the week is sort of also a whinge. Like my win of the week is, or one of them is, that I got a new accountant this week because I've been meaning to do it for a couple of years. I got an accountant when I moved back to the UK from Hong Kong, and I had a really complicated financial situation. And this is the only people that I found who even like sounded like they vaguely understood the situation of like multiple income streams from different countries. So I was like, perfect, you guys, I'll go with you. Even though I've never met them, they're nowhere near me. I picked them and actually they've been quite disappointing. So I wanted to change, but it's like 17 jobs. You have to research the accountant, then you have to message them, and then you have to respond to the message, and you can meet them, and then you have to like figure out what to ask them. And it's like, none of those things are fun.
No.
You don't want to do any one of those things.
No.
And they take up time when I could be writing. But I finally got to it because it's time for like re-signing with your accountant for another year. And I was like, you know what? I cannot buy staying with them there, because you pay them a fair amount of money and they were basically doing nothing for it, and I was really disappointed, and they made me feel really like I was an annoyance for asking questions. And I was like, I'm paying you for this. I could do this myself. I'm just trying to like do it properly and feel confident doing it properly. That's the only reason I hire you. Anyway, so the win part of it was I went to a local accountant's and got to spend like an hour chatting to the nicest man on earth, who was just lovely.
Aww.
and really made me feel like understood and listened to. And he had a lot of much, much bigger clients, but he, you know, really felt like he valued everybody at the same level. And he even said, like, when it comes to Texan, we quite often encourage people, like, they have a lot of space there because it's near me. I live in the countryside. There's quite a lot of space, if not a lot of money, I think, for offices. He's like, we encourage people just to come and sit in the office and do their taxes so that any problem you encounter, you can just literally nip over someone and be like, can you have a look at this, please? Which I was like, yes, that is exactly what I want.
That is
not be sat there looking at a spreadsheet and Googling things that I don't understand.
Yeah.
And they've got a pool table there, so perfect.
Okay, yeah, you stumbled into like magic accountant land.
Also the office is just beautiful. Like, it's beautiful old building, an old mill that was converted. Mm. So that was my big win of the week. But I've had a week where I haven't done as much writing as I wanted to, but I have done loads of things like that, which, like, it's really useful, or it's felt like it's been helpful. Like a lot of prep for the book bub. So I reformatted the box set that's in it. I put in leads to the new series I want to get some ARC readers for. I updated it with like the newer files because I've done some updates to the other books. Updated the cover. Like tons of little things like this that are just taking forever.
Yeah.
But my actual win is that I've also, as we were saying, it would be good to do some sort of like positive, exciting thing when a book comes out. Mm-hmm. And I want to have a tea party when my book comes out, because in the new series, it's about a tea room that gets launched, and it launches with a Mad Hatter's tea party, like Alice in Wonderland, inside this shop, because it's a tea room, but on a street of bookshops. So it's kind of literary themed. And so I have spent the week, my dad came over for lunch and my brother came over for dinner, and I wrangled them into helping me test out some recipes that were kind of Mad Hatter related. So I've made some like little finger sandwiches that are Queen of Hearts and Humpty Dumpty and what was the other? Oh, little toadstools.
The toadstools.
And then my brother came around. Yeah. My brother came around. We did, we carved radish into little toadstools. They were so effective and beautiful. So just really fun things like that.
Yeah.
And then I've also started making some brownies that I'm going to send to toadstools. So it's been really lovely. And that feels, I was talking to you about when you turn your job, when you turn your hobby into a profession, you lose the one thing in your life that you absolutely love and own for yourself, that you would willingly spend huge amounts of time on, in a way that is just for you. Because once you start professionalizing it, it's not just for you. You then have deadlines and you're talking about it on a podcast, and you know, you're sort of like, it belongs to other people, and it's not like indulging that time that you are really cherishing for yourself. So I used to write before work 2 hours every day in a coffee shop for books that nobody else ever really saw. And like things that I would take to a writing group, and it would just be a real commitment to myself. Whereas this is now a commitment to trying to pay my mortgage with books. And And I think I haven't replaced that hobby since I've started trying to professionalize writing, and I really want to. And I love baking in the same way. And I think even if I make my baking connected to my books, I'm not going to become a recipe creator or a recipe book writer. I'm only going to be doing it in a fun way, so it would actually be quite nice to kind of, you know, you get to make mistakes and you get to showcase that and you get to play and be creative. And I think I'm going to try and make baking a bigger part of my life again, because I love it, and I love eating delicious cakes and being creative and like making a Humpty Dumpty's wall out of fake ham.
I think that sounds so good. Yeah, it's nice to pick hobbies that you're actually going to benefit from. I pick hobbies that just fill my house with more clutter than anything else. It's like constantly just bringing things home, like, oh, we've got to find somewhere to put this now.
I mean, but then you've got endless gifts of people, right?
Yes, that's true. Yeah, that I'm sure
you make beautiful ceramics, so
yes, my ceramics are great.
I love that vase that you made. If you're not follow Sam on Instagram, you get to see her beautiful ceramics.
I've
But yeah, that was a long win and whinge, but I feel like we both got a lot going on right now.
Yes, so much. It's very active April.
But in a way that I think has come from this podcast, like I think we are both really stepping up what we're doing because you're having to follow through on like the vague thoughts that you had because you've said it out loud in a podcast. You've said it out loud to somebody else.
This is 100%. And yes, there's a lot of accountability.
Yeah.
So we should probably move on to the topic at hand, which was quotes and scenes that we're using for marketing. So how do you find and utilize quotes and scenes in writing and marketing? Kind of goes hand in hand, but I think this is a topic I think that is really going to be helpful for people who are at our level of writing, but also if anybody's listened to this who is like a much more beginner stage, I think this is going to be an incredible thing to think about and listen to. So I think you should start because I think you have been doing a lot more work than I this week. I've been thinking about stuff. But
I think you've really bigged this topic up. It's going to be a really important topic, guys. And then, Matilda, what have you done for this?
Super important. I think it's just a really like key idea. And until I heard this, until I thought or heard like about writing as marketing and doing writing specific scenes and quotes on purpose, I had not thought about it before. I think it's like an epiphany topic.
Epiphany. Yeah. Yes. It's interesting because actually I think to me it doesn't feel like an epiphany topic, but I definitely have during this week connected multiple things you've talked about recently in a way that makes it feel like I have been able to crystallize my thoughts on it. I think I'm going to have the epiphany in this podcast, so I'll keep my mind aware and ready for it. So marketable quotes and scenes, I guess first thing is like, what do we mean by that? So like definitely marketable quotes seem easy to at least you'll have seen something, right? If nothing else, you will have seen the Taylor Swift Georgia Poet Department's like, you know, billboard pictures online, which had quotes from her songs, which is interesting given that songs are audible. Obviously she's well known for her lyrics, but the fact that, you know, there were literally enormous billboards that I saw pitched up online of just like tantalizing lines from her songs and everyone analyzing them and thinking about them. And like that is so crystallized. It's like she put that on this week just for us because we're talking
about it. It really is.
Thank you, Taylor.
She's listening to the podcast 100%.
She's a fan. Yeah, I can imagine. She's got a lot of free time. So I think it's really interesting that quotes are marketable. Then you'll see them online, and I think we talked about this a number of times, as I often mention. I think romance writers are so good at quotes that are really hooky and that really make you think, oh gosh, I have to read that, because they even having like little quotes and then followed by the tropes, so they'll put like little bullet points of the tropes, instantly you know a reader, you're gonna love that or hate that. Like it's a very clear cut and dry, I have to have it or not for me, which I think is relatively unique to that genre. There's definitely some things I think in fantasy that you see where, you know, you might be an ogre fantasy person or you're a magic fantasy person, and they're quite different things. So I think there are some other genres that have got, and the same with cozy, in fact, like you're either paranormal or not paranormal, you're historical or not historical. There's some genres that have got like kind of things you either do or don't do, but in romance I think you can see it on the like scene and line level, which you don't really see in other genres. So you will definitely, when we've done some looking this week at different marketable quotes and like quotes that you see, and primarily we're looking on Instagram because that's a place that we both spend too much time and like to pretend that it's for productive purposes.
Research.
Searching this on Instagram. But it's a medium that's both visual and text, so it lends itself very well to marketing books. I constantly feel like I should get more on TikTok, and I think I would feel pressured to do it if I wrote in a genre that was more TikTok related, but actually poetry is still not taking over the TikTok area, so Instagram feels like demographically useful, and there are lots of good quotes on there, but they are often romancy things because that gives you the instant quick like heart fluttery, you know, oh gosh, I really want to read this.
It's butter. It's just so like we talked about last week. It leads in so well, like last week and this week, because without us talking about butter last week, this week wouldn't have been as eye-opening.
Yeah.
It is pure butter going into these quotes.
Mm-hmm. And so I was thinking about, like,
what have you been doing?
Yeah. So I started by thinking about what can I find anything from mystery writers that are kind of quotes that feel engaging. And I looked at a few other mystery writers that I follow online. In fact, I think my favorite trad mystery author is very good at putting quotes online, and it's Laurie R. King, and she does the Mary Russell stories, and she has really nice Instagram posts that quotes from her stories. She writes stories though that are Sherlock Holmes continuations, so she puts the word Sherlock in those quotes, and you can instantly see, oh, I'd love to read a Sherlock continuation, I will read that book. It's again, it's very buttery, hooky, like it gets you straight in. I think that's the key thing about a quote. But also lots of her quotes are intriguing. And I think we talked a while ago about, like, what's the brand being your emotional promise. And I think the same with quotes. Mm-hmm. So I also looked online, just like Googling like best mystery quotes and trying to figure out like what was good and what was bad. Like what made me think I want to read that. And it was the things that gave me the same feeling as a mystery. It was the ones where almost like a joke, where the first half seemed to say one thing and then there was a twist. And then there was second half, and you're instantly like, oh, I didn't see that coming. And trying to do that in just like, mm-hmm. you know, two lines or one line in a conjunction, it felt, you got that feeling of curiosity. And so that's what I did for research. And I just looked at the quote level, and I found it really hard to think about what could be done at the scene level. So yeah, let's just start again and switch over to you and talk about what did you do for the quote level sort of research.
So, Instagram,
my hard work,
like absolute favorite place to be. Not really. I just was looking through book quotes that I was drawn to, and found a lot of the stuff. I do think it's the romance stuff is obviously the most focus pulling, and because I write fantasy. And even though I kind of shy away from doing like romancey stuff, it is nice to see like what other people are doing that, like, I do have some romance in my book, so I can lean into that. It's just not like obviously crazy romance like romance writers. But I also haven't re-listened to it, but I have been thinking about it. So at the start of the year, I think it was, let me see if I've got the date on here. Oh, it was in December. The podcast, the Rebel Author podcast. I'm sorry, I'm like looking at my phone and my brain's going mental. The Rebel Author podcast, there's an episode, which is episode 220, and it is called How to Launch a Successful Series with Helen Scheurer. And I specifically remember this episode, listening to it, and this kind of all ties into to like what we've been doing this week, because Helen was talking about how she like plans out a successful series, and she's had many successful series. But the thing that really caught my eye, and it's something that I made a note of and have gone back to this week, is in her planning and like workshopping her series, she intentionally, what she calls, slips TikTokable and marketable scenes into novels that will hook readers. So I read that in December, and I remember thinking at the time, like, yeah, like, so she comes up with her quotes before she starts writing a book. And I don't do that. So my, like, it's so difficult. When you've read your own book 100 times, you can no longer see the good stuff. You just see boring, boring stuff. So you can't.
Well, so I would say the hard thing is, because I have gone through and looked for quotes because I wanted to put some on my website, and I've gone through and looked before, and I've often found really good sections, but they're spread over a paragraph, or they're like dotted and they're intersected with things that are functional to the story. Because especially in a mystery, you need a lot of like functional sections of text, and it was very hard to pull out like fun quotable lines.
A concise quote that's just like, oh, it's so witty, so good at this, so good at that. So she, that's what she does. And I do remember thinking in December, like, oh, like what a great idea. And I wrote a note in my Trello board of like the notes that I wrote for the podcast. Mm-hmm. And then I didn't go back to it. And then this week, it's kind of, I remembered like, oh, yeah, no, I did think about doing this and then I haven't. So this week, what I've been doing, because I'm currently editing a book, and what I've started doing is writing, because I'm kind of rewriting some of it, I'm rewriting quotes that I think sound good and then putting them into a document. Mm-hmm. So that when I come to do social media stuff and like drum up excitement and whatever I'm going to do, I just have them saved already. Because my worst thing is like reading through a novel that I've already written and like trying to find quotes that I think people will find exciting, because I haven't been writing buttery stuff. There is butter in there in my other books, but like Floralite, it's like it's not Kerrygold. It's margarine. So I'm so excited, like with this document that I've made. It's just an Excel spreadsheet. I love an Excel spreadsheet. So it's an Excel spreadsheet. And what I've started doing is color coding the quotes.
Oh.
To, I know, like I love color coding as well. So I have color coded quotes that are like show relationships. So that's like a red quote. And I've got a places quotes, which are like descriptions of cool places or like fun little things that are world building. Like I've got humorous quotes, quotes showing people's relationships with each other, and like dramatic quotes. So I've started color coding them so that whenever I need to whip up an exciting social post, I'll just know like what I want to do. And it's just, yeah, exciting.
I think this is the big question, is what are you doing with quotes? Because I think there's more to say, a bit more on like creating the quotes and kind of how we go about that. But I think it is useful to think about what's the purpose of the quotes. And I do notice that we're both talking a lot about quotes rather than scenes. I found it really hard to think, how could I possibly use a marketable scene? What would I do with a scene? Whereas a quote, I think I could put it on a social post. But then I know that I found recently, like, oh, I find social media posting really disappointing and like not effective. So then why am I thinking about that? But then I'm trying to do Facebook ads, and today I added a quote from the book that I am promoting for this Facebook ad. I do have a quote from that because of three books, so it was, I could find something in there that I had found ages ago that I could put in, and it's on a video ad just to see how that goes. But what I think I would feel more encouraged about on the quotes front is like figuring out a better way to use them, and because I'm not on TikTok, so what am I going to do with it?
Yes. I think like in the future, because I've wanted to do this for a while, is try and figure out a good way to make short trailer type videos that I can have like stock image of like particular people or like little scenes and things, and then have overlaid text of like a scene. So it's almost like watching a little short film with the scene overlay. So like that's something that I want to do, and I feel like if I can collect these quotes or scenes that I think are very visually stimulating, because that's how I work and that's how everyone works, like reading is playing a movie in your mind.
I have a fantasia.
I say that, not about this. Yes,
I do not play a film in my mind.
Not everyone does this, apologies to you poor people. But I play movies in my mind.
That seems like it would be distracting from the reading experience, but I appreciate that sounds also fun.
It is great fun. So that's something that I want to move into in the future, is trying to produce really nice trailer videos. And I think
I worry with something like that, and I worry on my own behalf, you know, more than yours because you're a grown up, that I would do it as procrastination, because people go back and forth on book trailers, right? People are still making book trailers. In fact, I saw a really good one this week from Joffy Books, who are always killing it with marketing. So if they're doing it, I think maybe it is working. And I've got other author friends who are doing it. I think to an extent that works if you are really killing it on like the video social scene already, and like you have an audience for it. And I think the problem that I always keep finding with like thinking about using social media promotion is you just have to be incredibly consistent and prolific, and I'm not going to become a videographer. So is there a point in me making like a couple of videos or a couple of quotes?
Yes, I see what you mean.
Posts.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and you definitely do have to be specific and intentional with the things that you're making. At the moment, my Instagram is kind of it's kind of coming together, and same with my TikTok. I'm being a little bit intentional with it right now. Like, I've been retraining my algorithm to put me in with book reviewers, and like this week I've just been, all of my stuff is people reviewing books, and I've been having interactions with people, so I've done quite a good job of that. And my next step in my social media plan is to start posting more like quotes and things, but just more bookish stuff about my own stories, because at the moment it's just more about like me and writing, and I'm throwing in book stuff here and there, but not as much as I want to be. So I want to be doing like multiple posts on the same thing, just with different music or different images, and see which ones hit. So just a bit more like playful with my social media.
Okay.
Attempts.
Yeah. Can you do that and then report back? Because I don't want to do that.
Yes.
Well, I think the thing is, like I want to do it if I... A, had the time, and B, if I felt really confident, like, I'm going to be really successful at this, it's going to be worth my time. But it feels like one of those things where it would take your time, and I wouldn't necessarily
say. No, you and me are like, we're very different in terms of what we want to spend our time on. So I don't mind spending time on stuff that doesn't get a lot of feedback. But I know that you feel very demotivated or demoralized when people don't interact with the stuff that you've spent a lot of time on.
Yeah.
I'm used to that. I'm a middle child, so I'm just like, yeah, I'll just keep doing what I'm doing, and like I'm just entertaining myself at this point.
But I do think
I'm fine with that.
Yeah, maybe I should be fine with that as well, because I think that's definitely, I have my therapy appointments on Sundays now, and that's definitely a thing I've been working on, is like, you know, I was a real like academic child, and very much you do things that you're good at, and you get praise and you get the grades, but I could do with doing more things that I am visibly not good at, or like visibly failing at, to feel comfortable with that. Mm-hmm. and to an extent, obviously book publishing is that, but
it is
also, it's very hard to tell how well anyone's doing. Like, a lot of people seem to be doing really well, looking at a rank, you're not, so I don't know. Are you mm-hmm. making money some other way that I don't know about? It's a lot of like smoke and mirrors.
It is. I think like failing to succeed.
Maybe I should do more social media where you... Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Learning something.
Exactly. And I think it is...
Like, while you do, you learn something.
You do. I was saying this to my mythical boyfriend today, that mm-hmm. you, like, he is very much a, like, he doesn't want to fail at things, and he finds it very difficult to start projects thinking that it's not going to go anywhere. Mm-hmm. And I'm the opposite. I'm just like, I want to start all the projects and see how far I can get, like, knowing that I'm going to be terrible when I start and assuming that I'm going to be a superstar by the time I've finished.
This feels so uncomfortable. But it's such a good attitude.
For stardom. So at some point I'll get there. I really do. I'm like, I'm sure that I'm supposed to be somebody. So. Just taking my time.
Taylor Swift's new best friend.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. Yeah, that, I mean, that's such a good attitude, because I do think that a lot of stuff in self-publishing is like, you can only try, and like, it might work really well for one person, not work well for you, even if you both do the exact same thing. Mm. And it can feel very paralyzing to be like trying to spend a lot of time evaluating everything, looking for the correct, quote-unquote, correct thing to be doing. Otherwise you've wasted your time. And that's, I mean, the part of it is like, there's always someone to say, oh, you should spend more time on your covers, or oh, you didn't do enough market research. Like, there's always
boring, you know, naysayers,
negative voices,
not interested.
If you're looking for them.
Yeah.
I think generally it's a very positive industry, but I think you can find negative voices, and I think I'm very drawn to that, and I'm very drawn to be like, oh, I'm such a fool, I tried this thing that obviously everyone knew wasn't going to work. I could just take a punt on more things.
I think that as well is you, and I'm not saying you, I'm just being in general, you, like us, we, the royal we. It's so easy to think, oh, like, it's going to take me so much time, I'm going to hate it, and I'm not going to get anything from it. But mm-hmm. the more you do of these things, like putting yourself out there, creating these things, like, you might fail at some of them. They might not go anywhere. But you could also find something that you love to make, like something creative that you love to like to put together and put on social media. And then that could be the thing. So I'm kind of looking at it from
like baking, right? Like I'm deliberately doing baking knowing that I'm not a fanatic baker. I enjoy it. I made brownies at the weekend and one half of the brownies fell massively, but I ate them and they were delicious, so it's fine.
You find things that you are particularly good at making. Like I can't make scones. Mm-hmm. Don't know why. It's
really
like it's like a phenomenon. I don't understand.
Yeah.
But I am great at cookies. And I can make bread so many things that I can just throw together and it all turns out great, but I can't make scones.
That is interesting because I feel like they're particularly easy to make. So that's
I know. I don't understand. It's really like one of the weirdest things.
That is an odd one. Okay. That is useful to know though. So won't ask you to make any scones in future.
Definitely don't.
Yeah. I think this is a useful like attitude thing to think about. Is like, if you come from a more academic background, and a lot of self-publishers do come from academic-y backgrounds and a lot of very like high achieving backgrounds, it can feel very tricky to do things when you're not having quick success. You can think, oh, I'm going on the wrong path. But a lot of it is slower and trial and effort, and is, you know, what might succeed one week might fail the next. Like Facebook ads. I've had Facebook ads where I run almost the exact same ad, the exact same audience, because I had to shift it around for some reason, and then suddenly it doesn't work. You're like, that can't possibly be true. And it feels very demotivating to me, but like I should just keep a positive attitude. Keep like, hopping along.
Yeah.
So
I think I learnt early on that people just are not going to like everything that I do. Like, I did art for A-level and my art teachers hated everything I made. Gave me thicker skin. It's
like,
this is what I've made. It's like, oh well, art's subjective.
Yeah, gosh. No, I feel like my inner, like, A student feels very tense at the idea of that. I'm just like, oh, I should change my art then so that I can be the teacher because I can get the A.
I refused. I remember once, this is just a little tangent, but I did this huge painting, absolutely huge canvas of Castlefield in Manchester. So it was like the canal and like the bridge, like all bridgey stuff. And I'd finished it. And then my teacher came up to me and said, but it's not finished. And I was like, what do you mean? She went, you've not finished the water. And I was like, that's how I wanted it to look. And she was like,
Oh, that's worse. That's worse than a criticism. Mm. Okay.
It was so good. No, it was so good.
I feel personally injured.
That's a her problem. Like, that was such a weird thing to say. And I just really thought like, wow, that was weird for you. Because for me, I was finished.
I feel like there's a whole demographic of the audience, like, that's got the like older daughter mentality along with me of like, that is not an acceptable response people to have to me. I will change what I'm doing so I can win you over and I will succeed.
Yes, no, I'm middle child the way.
Just cheerfully going along, doing your thing.
Flailing.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. So in terms of quotes then, I think I also listened to, I found on my podcast app earlier, I hadn't completed that episode, but I did listen to about half the episode that we were talking about with Ellen Schreurer and Sasha Black. And I remember having an instant response when she said, I write them before I write the book. And it felt like cheating. It felt uncomfortable, which is ludicrous because it's still you writing it. It's insane. I would have thought.
I know. Yes.
And I have been doing that this week. And it took me back to, in fact, that really joyous feeling of being like an angsty teenager and writing like a fantastic opening line, something that then you've got no idea what to do with it afterwards. So I've written some really like short, you know, concise, crystallized, essence-y lines that would look really good in a quote. Because now I'm not a teenager anymore, I actually know how to write the rest of the book. So I can then put those into a book. And I've thought about which character will say them and kind of where it will come up. And I probably would have written something like it when I got to that point, but it would have been ramblier. It would have been, you know, choppy. And I know, and in fact, I could make it choppier in the book, knowing that I own the copyright to this. I can change it wherever I want. Like, I can't plagiarize myself, so I can change the quote when I want to put it on marketing. And if I want to make it slightly ramblier in the book, fine. And that it felt really good to think about those scenes, those quotes in isolation. I definitely haven't thought about how to use them scenically for me, but I have thought about quotes. And I've made some quotes already for the promotion of the book in future. I made some little videos about the quotes. Feel very excited about it.
Yes, your quotes are very good. I had a little preview yesterday and they made me very excited. And I'm so excited to read the book. So come on, chop, chop.
I know, I'm doing so much work for this book, of which I've only written the first chapter. I really feel like I have to get on. That is... But that is what I'm doing this evening. I'm looking at the year planner that you normally have behind you on your office wall, which I've done nothing with. And it's now the end of the fourth month of the year and it's still blank. I'm going to take it down after this, take it off the wall, write all over it and put my deadlines in.
Yes.
So I can figure out how I actually get the books ready on time. But I have done some writing this weekend. Mm-hmm. So I wrote most of the second chapter. And I had got to that stage where I was sort of paralyzed by the first chapter. I'd worked on it so long and it was feeling really good that I felt like I could only make it worse by carrying on the book. But I carried on and it's great. Like it feels like good. It was worth putting that time in to get kind of the tone and the style and the level of detail correct, that now I've continued in that vein. And definitely the writing of the second chapter is not as good, but I can go back and sort that out later. That's fine.
Yes.
Stuff are really good.
Good stuff. That is, that is pushing through the fear. Well done.
And that's quite to put in. And I think I would take my marketing. And that is, in fact, a social media thing that I do quite like doing, is like making little videos with quotes on. You can do that in front of TV while you're just sort of relaxing in an evening. And, you know, if that works, it works. If it doesn't, you know me, I'm easy breezy.
Oh, yeah, 100%. Not worried about the outcome at all.
Do we have anything else to say about quotes and scenes for marketing?
I don't think so. I think this is much like much of what we've been talking about. It's all ongoing. But it's just really nice to touch on these topics specifically and keep like open a tab in my brain. So it's like new tab open. Mm. Hopefully I'll keep this one open for as long as possible.
And we are meeting next week in person for our monthly session, which is great. So we can kind of have a longer chat and look at things if we need to then. And we'll be planning out the next set of episodes. And then we'll also be recording an episode at the end of next Sunday as well. And so for next week's topic, we are continuing on our series of writing as marketing. And that episode will be about blurb writing, which is very exciting because it's one of those things that everyone hates. And actually, I now really love. With like butter... My blurb, my new book, I feel really happy about it. So, yes. I'm excited. So do you have any initial thoughts on that?
I have the same. I've always been a little bit hesitant to write a blurb. And I know that some people write them before they start. And sometimes I do have a go at writing one before I start writing a book. But I can't say I always use what I've written. I do love the challenge of blurb writing, and I love that people have guidelines on what should be in a blurb, but I do find it challenging to try and distill a story down, so that'll be a fun thing to talk about, like the best ways to do it. I'm really enjoying it at the moment. I've been tweaking some of my blurbs on Amazon and having a great time, so I'm really excited to talk about it.
And I think, spoiler alert, I think the end is going to come to the, or at least for me, the same conclusion as we've come for everything, like butter and quotes. It's like, do it before you write the book.
Yes.
Why have I been doing everything after I've written the book? That is too late.
Yes. Oh, I know.
Yeah.
Such idiots. It really just feels like cheating.
That's my epiphany. Epiphany. It's plan the marketing before you write the book, which,
yes,
again, it's one of those things that sounds so obvious. I cannot believe that I'm having to say this out loud, but fine. We are learning as we go.
Yes.
But I'm excited about this next week because I think I have definitely had a big, big journey with writing blurbs, and now I feel really happy with blurbs. And part of that's coincided with the improvements in AI. So
yes, we'll have that fun discussion
next week.
Yes.
But also partly it is just like a lot of things we talked about. So it will sort of bring together everything we've discussed, and I'm looking forward to that chat next week. And I will see you in person on Sunday, next Sunday, and we will see everyone else next Wednesday.
Yes. So we'll
speak then.
Okay. Goodbye.
Bye. You've been listening to Pen to Paycheck Authors.
Stay tuned for our next episode, and don't forget to subscribe to learn how to write your way to financial success.